Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome into RNIB Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. First heard each Tuesday lunchtime at 1 or catch us as a podcast. Just ask your smart speaker or smartphone for the latest episode of RNIB Tech Talk. Of course, this is our opportunity as blind or partially sighted people to get together each week and talk about the world of technology. It's your programme. We're always keen to hear from you. So if there's something you'd like to hear, do let us know. The email address, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be finding out about accessible phones from the RNIB Products for Life store. I'll be taking a quick look at the new Zoom Essentials series, and we'll be finding out which town in the UK has recently got talking bus stops. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. A very warm welcome in to our co-hosts, Hubert Pavarkovich and Callum Stoneman. Good to have you with us. Let's come to each of you and find out what's grabbing your attention in the world of technology this time. Callum, let's come to you first.
So I mentioned last week that I've moved over to Windows. I've got a new Windows laptop, and I've been trying out Mozilla Thunderbird as my email client, which has been around for years. And I've known about it, but never really tried it out. And it's working very nice. It's a nice little... The reason I bring this up is because, really, there's nothing special about it. It's just a free, you know, accessible email and calendar client. But previously on Windows, I've always used either Outlook or just the built-in mail app on, the Windows 10 or Windows 11 mail. But those apps, at least for a personal users, are going to be going away at some point this year. So the mail app is going to go, and it's going to be replaced with what's known as the new Outlook, which is basically the Outlook web app. And I don't know if either of you two have tried this yet, but it's, I mean, strictly speaking, yes, it's accessible, but not very usable. I mean, I've tried it briefly and found it really difficult to navigate around. Because it's a web interface, it's not as efficient to navigate around. Some of the shortcuts either don't exist or they've changed a bit. So it's really fiddly and clunky at the minute. So if you're in the same boat, then and you want to try and use something else for when those apps go, then yeah, I can highly recommend Thunderbird. It's fantastic.
It's good to hear that Thunderbird is still going. I used it back in the day, and I thought it was going away, Callum.
I thought the same, to be honest. I thought it was, moving away, but it doesn't seem to be. It looks like it's been updated recently, and I'm using iCloud Mail and calendars. I had to install a couple of add-ons to get the calendar to sync, but no, I mean, it seems fine. It seems to be still going strong by the looks of it.
How about you, Hubert? What's grabbing your attention?
For me, it's the latest iOS update, iOS 17.4, and it introduces a few different things. My two kind of features that I've picked out, one of them is kind of a returning function where you do music recognition. You can now add that track to your library when it recognizes it, which wasn't, which didn't seem to be there for quite a few software versions. It was there, then it disappeared, and now it's back. But what I like, if you're a big podcast person, which I hope you are if you're listening to this, you can now have podcast transcripts in the Apple Podcasts app, which I think is a really good development. And it's a feature that I've certainly been wanting more podcast apps to have. So, yes, that is the latest addition in the iOS 17.4 update. I've not got a chance to play with it yet, but it's something I'll certainly be exploring, as I think podcast transcripts is something that will be very useful for people.
Keen to know how good those transcripts are, right? Because obviously when you automate stuff and you don't have any human checking it, you know, can the transcript identify who's talking, or does it just say, you know, speaker one and speaker two? How does it cope with technical information or things that are poorly recorded? You know, there'll be lots of edge cases there where that automated transcript could struggle. So it'd be good to know how that's going for you. So let us know, how do you roll your email? Are you Outlooking or Thunderbirds Go on your machine? And have you updated to the latest version of iOS, and how's that going for you? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Hubert, thanks a lot. It's another Tech Talk. As blind and partially sighted people, we of course love to stay in touch, and many of us use smartphones, whether they be from Apple or Google Android. But not everybody is comfortable with a mainstream modern smartphone. Some of us still like push buttons, and some of us like things that are a little bit easier to see. And joining us now to share some of the options available from RNIB's Products for Life store, it's Claire Maxwell. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio, Claire. You've got four options, I guess, to talk about today. Let's start with the Capsys Mini Vision. What is the Capsys Mini Vision?
Hi, Dave. Yes, the Capsys Mini Vision is probably one of the simpler ones which we offer from RNIB, that is. And it is a button phone. It has large contrasted black buttons on a white case. So for those who do have some vision, that might be very helpful. It has text-to-speech, so you can use that. And also you can use voice commands to operate the phone as well. So it is quite simple in the way that the interface works. And as I said, the keypad is, I think, probably one of the biggest features worth pointing out for this phone. It does have other things, like colour detector and a dedicated SOS button built in as well, which can give people a little bit of confidence, especially if they might feel that they need that support.
Right, and quite a portable handset. You know, a lot of the smartphones now are huge, aren't they? So some of these push-button phones are just a little bit more compact.
Exactly that. So, about the size of your hand. So it's quite a compact device, which means that it does have a fairly small screen, about 2.5 inches across. So it does have that keypad, it does have text-to-speech. It also has the capacity to adapt the font size and the font contrast and colour background, but it does have, a compact design.
Another name synonymous with accessible phones designed for blind and partially sighted people is, of course, Blind Shell. And the Blind Shell Classic has been available for a while. They updated it. I think it's fair to say it's improved quite a bit, the Blind Shell Classic.
Yes, so we're now on to the Blind Shell Classic 2, and it still is a phone with buttons. So if that is important to you, that is available with the Blind Shell Classic. It has some additional features built into it, including access to WhatsApp, YouTube, and the internet browser, which was done because they got a lot of customer feedback that these were features they wanted to be able to access. It also does have two different colour options as well. So it has a black colour option and a red colour option. If you're like me, red is absolutely my favourite colour, so that would be my choice. And it has a dedicated SOS button as well. Again, if you feel that you need that support or confidence when you're out and about. I think some features worth mentioning about this phone as well are things like the NFC tags, which are tags you can attach onto items to label them up around the home. So you can use it, attach the tag on, say, if you don't want to mix up your hand cream and your face cream, for example. You can label that up and you can then read that using the phone. So you record your message using your phone onto the tag, and then you can scan that with the camera of the phone and get that information. And another thing which is available with this Blind Shell Classic 2 is the beep locators. Now, the beep locator is something you might find handy if you're out and about, you're traveling like me, you might want to attach it onto your suitcase. And then if you're struggling to find an item, you know, your suitcase, your keys, whatever it is that you've attached it onto, you can call that from your phone and it will play a sound until you locate it. So I think that's worth mentioning. They are additional things that you would purchase separately. You do get three tags included with your phone, but you can purchase additional things as well.
A UK company that has also been around for a little while in the area of mobile accessibility is Synaptic. What is Synaptic up to these days?
Yes, yeah, Synaptic, they have certainly been around in this space for a long time, as you say, Dave. And Synaptic, I think, is worth mentioning because this is where we're transitioning over to a smartphone, so a touch screen phone. And this is on a Galaxy Samsung phone, but the Synaptic software sits on the phone and it acts as a sort of interface for customers. So they're not actually using the interface on the Samsung Galaxy. They're using the Synaptic software to access the features. And this is a much simpler menu system than you might get on the Samsung Galaxy, for example. So it's very simplified. You only have a couple of options on the screen at one time. And I think one of the key things with Synaptic worth mentioning is that it also on every screen has a help button. So if you're struggling, you need a little bit of a prompt on how to use this particular feature, you can tap on this on the screen and get instant help and support on how to use that particular feature. It's also worth mentioning that Synaptic have actually got a dedicated part of their app, which is for the RNIB reading services, so you can access your reading services material directly from the Synaptic menu.
Now, compared with the Capsys Mini Vision and the Blindshell Classic, would you say the Synaptic options are perhaps more geared to somebody with a little bit of residual vision, maybe somebody who's perhaps partially sighted, given that it is a touch screen, or do you think a totally blind person will get on just fine with a Synaptic device?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think a person with no vision can absolutely use this phone. I would say, you know, as a touch screen user myself with absolutely no vision, I can't see any issues. However, it is something that can be a learning curve, and I think it's worth, you know, trying out these phones where possible, getting advice on the best type of phone for you before you make a purchase like this. But I would never say it's not possible for someone with no vision.
Okay, so we'll come on to how you might get hands-on with some of these devices in a moment. But before we do that, let's just talk about the Smart Vision 3.
Yes, the Smart Vision 3. So this is a phone with a triple interface, if you like. So this combines a keypad with a touch screen at the top, and you can also use voice commands to, you know, make a call, to send a text message, to dictate. So you can use all three methods to control this phone. I think it's an interesting option for someone who perhaps, you know, might want to use a touch screen sometimes, but perhaps struggles in other instances. You know, if you're making a phone call, you might just simply think, I wish I had buttons just to type in the number, for example. But it is this phone is based on Android 11, so it is a full smartphone, has all the features you would expect of a smartphone, and it does also have Google Assistant built into it. So it is an all singing, all dancing phone with that triple interface to give that additional confidence, I suppose, if you still would like to use a keypad.
So, four options there: the Capsys Mini Vision, the Blindshell Classic, devices from Synaptic, and the Smart Vision 3. You suggested, Claire, it might be an option for folk to get hands-on with some of these devices before making a final decision. What are some of the ways we can do that?
Some of the ways you can do that, if you are lucky enough to be near one of our stores in Edinburgh, in Belfast, or in London, we do have regular supplier events. It's always worth calling our helpline or checking the RNIB events page to find out what's happening near you. Certainly, in terms of the Capsys phones, we do have an upcoming event on the 4th of March in the London store. So that is a good opportunity to get hands on. We are also connecting with local societies, so it's always worth checking in with your local societies to see what events they're running and what's in their calendar that's coming up.
So, how do we get the latest pricing information? And if folk want to maybe download a bit more of the documentation just to compare and contrast some of the options that we've shared.
I would suggest that people go on to the RNIB shop where you can read more in depth about the features of each of the phones and do a bit of comparison beforehand. And you can do that by going to rnib.org.uk/shop. Or you can alternatively call our helpline on the usual number 0303 123 9999.
Claire Maxwell from RNIB's products team. Thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
You're with RNIB Connect Radio in Belfast at the Technology for Life Fair, and I'm with Daniel McGravy, who is VisionAid's representative for Scotland, but he's in Belfast. And Daniel, you're going to talk us through some of the products that you are showing today.
Yes, love to be part of it. Yeah, absolutely. So I think what we'll do is we'll start with, we've got a sort of range of different products set up. We'll start from our reading machines and we'll work our way down to our magnifiers,
okay?
Let's do it. So I'm going to start with a product called the ReadEasy Evolve Max. Now this is a reading machine about the size of a radio, really fast sort of recognition on it in terms of the text accuracy. There's seven controls on it, faster and slower, forward and backwards pause, and taking a picture. So if I press the taking a picture button.
Capturing. With one of his previous incarnations. All she knew was that sometime in his previous life, whenever and whatever it could be.
So a really simple standalone reading machine.
Absolutely, we've designed it with that in mind. So all the buttons are different colours and different shapes, so they are very tactile to use. And if you like as well, there's a feature pack you can add on to connect it to a much larger screen and use it as a large magnifier as well, if that is of use to you as well.
And just remind us of the name.
The ReadEasy Evolve Max.
That's the ReadEasy Evolve Max. All right then, Daniel, let's move on.
Moving on, we've got the Voxy Vision. Now, more of a portable device this time, okay? It uses the hardware of a phone, but it looks can be deceiving. It's not a phone, but...
One reading machine.
Now, whether or not this will pick up on the mic, I'm not sure, because it is a loud phone, but it is a very loud room.
Volume 100%.
So this will talk you through absolutely everything. So it can be a reading machine.
Two, scanner.
A scanner.
Three, magnifier.
A magnifier.
Four, gallery.
And you can also save audio and pictures with it as well. Main use for it is a reading machine. So if I use the vocal control, reading machine.
Machine.
It'll go directly into the reading machine, and again I'm going to use the same piece of text. You point the phone's camera roughly at what you want to read. You press a little alcove at the bottom is how you control it.
Sometime in his previous life, whenever and whatever it had been, had made him an expert on ever calls.
There we go. Well, the accuracy sounds good.
Very good, yeah. And to be fair, this is one of the few devices I've known to that has a very accurate handwriting recognition as well, which is really handy. You need to connect it to Wi-Fi, but at the same time, it understands my handwriting, and my handwriting is not amazing. So,
so remind us again, sorry, the handheld... So
the Voxy Vision was that
one. That was the Voxy
name.
Vision,
yeah,
brilliant.
Wi-Fi Vision.
Okay, all right, Daniel, let's carry on.
One last reading machine.
Yep.
We've got, now this is the one people may have heard of, the Orcam.
Yes.
Okay, so similar sort of idea to the Voxy Vision. You've got a pen, a device that looks like a sort of marker pen. You can also get one that connects to your glasses. There's a button on the far end of the machine. You press and hold that, pointing towards a piece of text you want to read, and you let go.
With one of his previous incarnations, all she knew was that sometime in his previous life, whenever and whatever it had been, had made him an expert on everything from fish to how to lay a banquet.
And similar to the rest of the image of these machines, you can change the voice on it, you can change the speed of the text, and you can also change the volume as well. Okay.
So events like this one are really important so that people can feel the different form factors and figure out, actually, do I want something that's tabletop? Do I want something that's going to, you know, feel like a phone?
Absolutely.
or a, like you say, a bit like a biro?
Absolutely. I mean, you tend to, in my personal experience, it's you can't really, sometimes you can't get an idea until you've actually had a chance to play, which is really nice about these events. You can have a chance to sort of handle the objects as well as sort of see what they can do. But no, it's very good.
Okay, so that was the Orcam. Is that the Orcam Read?
The Orcam Read Smart, yeah.
Yeah.
Moving on now, this one's going to be... I'm going to need to describe this one. This is a wearable magnification called an A-Sight VR. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a sort of virtual reality headset. You pop it on, and you control it with a remote. You can zoom in it. You can zoom in and out. You can change all the different color contrast modes, and you can use this for either watching TV for distance work, or I have known a few musicians to use this for sort of intermediate distances if you need your hands free for sheet music and things like that. So there's multiple different focus controls that you can use with it as well. And it uses like a lot of low vision technology, it uses a phone in the front as its camera.
Okay, so students and maybe people in a leisure setting.
Students, yeah, to be honest, I'll be honest, most of the time the VR headsets, students definitely can use it, but I've known a lot of elderly users that use these VR headsets for watching TV and things like that. Just because or watching the football is another good one. So if anything for like distance work and things.
And remind us the name on that one.
The A-Sight VR. So A-Sight Virtual Reality. Yeah.
And how do you spell it? A-Sight.
A-Sight. So A-C-E-S-I-G-H-T.
Okay.
Yeah. A-Sight.
A-Sight.
Yeah.
Right.
So, moving on to some software.
Yeah.
Okay. So I've got a camera called the Zen Max connected to a laptop just here. Okay. Now, the software I've got on the computer is called Readit. Okay. Now, this is a text-to-speech software that can also be used for importing and exporting documents and a magnifier all-in-one kind of thing. Okay. So, I'm just going to capture I've got a nice sort of A3-sized magazine here. Okay. I'm going to capture the text. It will go through the entire document.
Right. So this is software that you put on your laptop that
yes.
you attach then a camera to the USB port.
Exactly.
And then you can scan a document on the table. So this is going to perhaps be a bit less portable than some of the other solutions that
less portable, but at the same time very usable. So it's the case of the text to speech is very accurate. As I say, you can also import and export PDFs into this, so you can really get anything from online and scan it onto this software here. So you can really read anything from online, or you can export it to. I have actually exported to an MP3 for someone who wanted a vocal instruction manual for one of our other products as well. So it does work for that kind of thing as well.
Excellent. And the name of the software?
So it's called Readit. Readit. Yeah, all one word. Readit. And then the camera I've got connected at the moment is called the Zen Max. The Max just refers to the fact it can do A3 print, so it's slightly higher. Yeah.
And is that camera specifically for this purpose, or would you use the camera for anything else?
No, it's built for the software,
right.
But you can use the camera app on your phone if you want to. It's not really built for it. It's mainly built for the software. But you could still couldn't scan anything, but you could use it as a magnifier if you've got any zoom on your camera app.
Right. Okay. So.
Moving on one more time, we've got a very similar sort of thing. We've got this one doesn't have any vocal cues, I'm going to just explain through it. So this, it's another camera. Now this one's mainly used for distance. It's called the Coast. Now we've made this with students and business professionals in mind, but at the same time, it's generally, if anyone who's really just needing help for looking across a room, PowerPoints, anything like that, or you could use this. So it's a 4-megapixel camera in the Coast. It's got a nice telescopic stand, so if you're needing to look at anyone over you, then you can sort of get that sort of extra perspective. It's a USB-C connection, so it'll connect to any modern iPads, most Android tablets, or any sort of laptop. And we also give you a few free USB-A adapter with the product as well, so you can use a USB-A as well. USB-C is preferred.
Okay, and who's this really designed for?
So we have made it in mind with students and sort of business professionals in mind. So for example, reading the board across the room, or looking at a PowerPoint or anything like that, so you can freeze the image. It's got a 10 times optical zoom, but you've also got a really big good digital zoom as well for the camera. So if you've got someone who is very low vision, you can get a really nice large text on here, rather than, for example, and it's really sleek as well. So a lot of distance cameras tend to be quite bulky. I tend to find this one is a really nice sleek design, and it folds away quite nicely as well. So you can connect it to really any, again, same sort of thing. You can connect this to a camera app, although we do sell it with a software called Read It Lite as well, which is the sort of distance magnifier. So this is the Cloverbook. Okay, this is the newer one that's come out, called the Cloverbook XL. It's got a 15.5-inch screen. Okay, now this is a reader, a distance camera, and text-to-speech all in one. Okay, now its main sort of its default function is a reader. Okay, so now you can't see this, but there is a, you can go up to 88 times magnification on this, and this the XL version can go up to A3 text as well. Now there is a button on the side where you can change it to a distance camera, and you can also do a multi, you can also split the screen as well, so you can have one half on reading, one half on distance. It can make it really handy if you're trying to take notes but also looking at something across the room as well. Or if you just want to, for example, if you're in your garden and you want to see a bird table across the garden, you've got your distance camera whilst you also do your crossword underneath.
And why would you go for this versus something like the software that we were looking at earlier?
Now, the thing with the software is it relies on the fact that you've already got a computer, whereas this is its own product, this is its own hardware, and it's this, for example, I can think in terms of like students. This doesn't need to be connected to Wi-Fi or anything like that, so there's no trouble with exams or anything like that. I know certain regions will be a little bit iffy with Wi-Fi connectivity for different products, and also there's also the fact that, in my opinion, sometimes something that's its own product is easier to use as well. So you've got sort of tactile buttons rather than having to worry about shortcut keys. And also you've got the text to speech on there, which also makes it quite handy for.
So lots and lots of reading products available from VisionAid, and just feels like the tip of the iceberg. I know you guys have got loads of stuff online as well. Daniel, what's the best way for listeners to learn more?
So the best way for to learn more, we've got a website, visionaidtechnologies.co.uk, or we have a number. It's 0800 002 5555. That's 0800 002 5555. Okay, and then option number two will bring you through to an inquiries line. They'll answer any questions you have.
Daniel McGravy from VisionAid, thanks so much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio. Thank you.
Talking bus stops have recently been introduced in Leicester, thanks to the work between Leicester City Council and local sight loss charity Vista. Hubert has been finding out how they work.
A new introduction in Leicester of talking bus stops was a recent development, and of course we here at Connect Radio want to know what they are, how they work, what it's all about. Joining me now is Steve Payne, Director of Care and Services at Vista, the local sight charity for Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland. Steve, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. It's nice to be here.
How did this idea come about?
I think generally they've been about for some time, Hubert. I think what's happened is the development of why they're in existence. And I think obviously accessibility to public transport is really important, especially for the people we support with sight loss. So growing how many of these bus stops were available in Leicester, Leicester and Rutland especially was really important to us. So in essence, they're already in existence. But for us, what came about was an opportunity through a funding stream from the Department for Transport for us to work on a project that supported reducing the isolation for those with the sight loss through transport. And we looked at three veins in the project. We looked at awareness training, really important. I know we do that across the country in other sight loss charities really well. An accessible guide to transport in Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland, which talked about all the different methods of train, bus and taxi, private taxi, and infrastructure. And that's where the talking bus stops came in. This was something that really interested us. So what we did, Hugh, was just put a heat map of where our beneficiaries lived and then looked at what accessibility there was already there in terms of public transport and whether these talking bus stops would support people getting out and about more. So that's, in essence, where they came about.
So for people that, have not experienced these or not sure how these work, how does a talking bus stop work? What information does it give you and how does a user get that information?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I've talked with our partnership organisation with VIX, VIX Technology, who are at the forefront of this type of bus stop. But the starting point basically is a GPS tracker and comms on each bus, which sends constant locational updates to the overarching real-time system on the bus stop. What it then does is something very clever. It uses its algorithm to predict bus arrival times along the route, and then they're sent digitally to each stop every 30 seconds. So it's constantly updating. And those waiting at the stop, the important thing is, how do you get this information? They can either access it through a digital poll, it was a mounted screen on there, or by pressing a button and hearing it announced, which is the important bit for us and our beneficiaries, and that's via the pole mounted speaker. And also saw the buttons in the same position on each pole. So if you get familiar with these bus stops, you're not going to be searching for the button. It's going to be in the same place on every single one of them. And it's just below the timetable case. So once you can find the square where the timetable is, it'll be just below that. And it's at a height that's also accessible for our wheelchair users as well, which was really important. All the real-time information bus stops that are out there deployed in Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland are also enabled with the text-to-speech functionality button as well. So it helps those with a hearing loss as well as sight loss. So really important, of course.
How many of these bus stops are currently available in the Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland area?
So that's, I spoke with our local authority colleagues in VIX, and believe it or not, there's been over 700 installs around Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland. And I say, I know they're growing daily because there are plans to have more. They can be used by anybody at any time, but it does offer the benefit to our beneficiaries with sight loss. Other systems are deployed by other councils around the country, but most of those rely on an app being installed on a phone to trigger voice announcements or passengers carrying fobs, which was the original talking bus stop idea. But those fobs can cost up to £50 each. So the beauty of the current technology generated by VIX with the local authority as well is that it doesn't cost anything to access it.
If people wish to find out more about Vista and what work you do and or maybe get involved, how can they go about that?
Yeah, that's not a problem. Feel free to contact us on 0116 249 8839, or email us at info@vistablind.org.uk.
Fantastic. Steve Payne, Director of Care and Services at Vista, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Hubert. Thank you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now,
techtalk at rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio from Belfast. We're at the Technology for Life Fair at the Europa Hotel, and I'm with Humanware, who are introducing a new Braille learning tool called Annie. And Lucy Begley is going to tell us all about it. Tell us all about Annie, Lucy.
Okay, so Annie is a gamified tool for teaching really young children the basics of, to introduce them to the basics of Braille, but take them through the alphabet and eventually learn all their grade two contractions as well. So it starts by introducing them to the shape of the Braille cell and introducing them to the Perkins-style keyboard to start with. So it really is for very young children from age three.
Okay, and we've got Annie sitting on the table just to my right. Do you want to just give us a little bit of a physical description of the device? What would customers expect to find when they get Annie in their hands?
Okay, so it's a really nice looking device. It's white with an orange panel on it. And then on the orange panel, we've got white Perkins style keys. So we've got our six dots, and then we've got an enter and a backspace. So it's a portable device. It's about sort of 7 inches square, and then maybe sort of 2 inches, 2.5 inches tall, roughly. So it's sturdy and it's robust, but you can quite easily sort of pick it up and move it around as well. At the top, on the top face, at the top left-hand corner, we've got two large Braille cells. And that's just to introduce the child to the shape of the Braille cell in a sort of larger way, so they can clearly feel the layout of dots 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6. So we've got two of those large Braille cells. And then at the top right-hand corner, we have got six standard Braille cells, so the dots at the standard size, so that the student can feel the relationship between the two. And then down at the bottom, we've got a space bar and a left and right key to move through your different lessons and to select the activity that you're going to do that day. Around the edges, we've got a USB port, your charging cable, on-off button, and we can also plug in headphones as well if it's been used in a classroom. And that's at the right-hand side. And the volume wheel, of course.
Excellent. Right. And I think it's also worth mentioning that the large Braille cells in that top left-hand corner, they're interactive. So the dots pop up, but there are apps on the device that will allow you to push those dots back down and respond to what you're being asked.
That's right, yeah. So there's a really cool game called Whack-A-Braille. And you're absolutely right. So not only can the student feel the shape of the dots, Whack-A-Braille asks them, it's a game, and they would say press dot one, and the student would actually push down dot one as if it were a button. And that's just a good way of sort of learning and consolidating the learning of what the different dot positions are.
Shall we hear a little bit of what Annie sounds like?
Okay. So Annie has a human recorded voice. So it's a really nice pace and really geared towards younger children. Sound nice and friendly and approachable.
English Braille Grade 1.
So I'm just pressing my arrow keys to move through the main menu.
English Braille Grade 2. Contracted Braille. Vocabulary Builder.
So Vocabulary Builder is a good way of the students learning to type words of 6 letters or less.
Games. Settings. Introduction to Annie.
So the introduction to Annie is fantastic when the students first get it, because it talks them through what all the different dots are, and even for parents that maybe don't know how the Perkins style keyboard is laid out, they will describe which one's dot one and what that means. So it's a really good sort of course to start with when you first get the Annie.
Should we have a go at one of the games?
Yes.
There we are.
Whack-A-Braille.
So that sound we heard there, that was all the pins popping up.
To press and you will have to press that dot down on the large Braille display. For example, if I say dot 2, you have to press dot 2 down on the large Braille display. For every dot you press correctly, you get a point. You have 30 seconds to whack as many dots correctly as possible. So the quicker you are, the higher you score. Press space to start the game. Press left. Ready, steady, go. Dot 6.
Okay.
So
I can feel the Braille under my fingers, and as the voice is announcing what to press, I'm pushing that dot down.
Dot 5. Dot 1. Dot 4. You've scored 30 points. Congratulations. This is your new high score. That was fun, right?
I'll take that.
New high score. What a superstar.
Thank you very much. So, obviously, on a serious note, HumanWare, very passionate about Braille literacy. We know that you've got lots of Braille projects on the go, lots of very popular Braille displays, but of course, you want to bring people to Braille as well, right? And you'll be aware that sometimes learning Braille in the first place isn't always straightforward. So I guess this product really helps HumanWare as a whole.
It does. It fits in with our portfolio really, really well, because Fabulous is the Braille Note Touch Plus, and the Brilliant, and the Mantis, and the Monarch will be. There really hasn't been anything for those very young children, you know, age 3. To learn Braille and to do it, obviously with guidance from the QTVI, but to be able to consolidate that and practice that when the QTVI is not sitting beside them. So the way it works with Annie is it comes with access to a teacher dashboard called Helios. And Helios is a piece of software that allows the QTVI to sort of personalise the learning for the students. So they might decide, okay, we're going to focus on the letter H this week. So they would select the letter H on the teacher dashboard on Helios, so that when the Annie's turned on by the student, the letter H lesson is what they're presented with. So then they're able to practice that letter H with Annie talking them through, getting the feedback that it's all correct, because of course on the Perkins Brailler we don't get that, you know, that speech feedback. We're not getting the kind of encouragement that the Annie gives you there. So it's I think it's going to be great to introduce younger children to Braille at an earlier age.
And in terms of the product development, how close are we to being able to get this in the UK? Has it been launched yet?
Oh yeah, really, really soon. We're going to have stocks in a few weeks before the end of March.
So watch this space.
We're nearly there. We'll have stocks in really just a matter of weeks now. So exciting times.
Indeed. Right. Well, thank you so much, Lucy. Really appreciate you taking the time to introduce us to Annie. If anybody wants to learn more about Annie from HumanWare in the UK, what's the best way to do that?
Right, well, please give the HumanWare office a call at 01933 415 800, or our website is www.humanware.com.
Lucy from HumanWare, thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Dave.
Making technology accessible. Tech Talk.
If you were tuned in to Tech Talk last week, you will have heard reports from the Technology for Life Fair at the Europa Hotel in Belfast. And all of those reports were recorded using one of the new Zoom Essential Series digital recorders. Zoom recorders, of course, have been around for a long time and are very popular with journalists and people recording music and other audio applications. And recently, to much excitement, Zoom have announced a new series called the Essential Series that includes some accessibility features that are particularly helpful for those of us who are blind.
When you get one of the new Zoom Essential Series recorders and you switch it on, it starts talking straight away out of the box, which is fantastic. There are three products in the range, the Zoom H1 Essential, the Zoom H4 Essential, and the Zoom H6 Essential. Now, I have the H1, and this is a very small, very portable, handheld digital recorder. It's a stereo recorder, takes two AAA batteries, and can be connected to your computer as a storage device or microphone, and is fantastic for recording interviews in the field, face-to-face. There is also the H4. And the H6, and those devices are a bit more sophisticated. They include a basic mixer. They allow you to connect multiple inputs. They have XLR sockets on there, so you can connect professional audio equipment, and they also have slightly different microphones. But for now, we're going to be focused on the H1 Essential, and I have that recorder in my hand right now, and I've got the microphones pointing away from me. So the microphones are in what Zoom call the XY configuration, so they appear to overlap and point in opposite directions, and this avoids you getting a sort of a silent spot in the middle of your stereo field. These microphones are very exposed, so you will need to put a pop shield over the top, so a little foam cover just to stop any wind getting in there, messing up your recording. The other really important thing as well to say about all of these Zoom Essential Series recorders is that they support 32-bit float. And what that means in practice is that you don't have a gain control, so you don't need to set the recording level. If your recording is peaking or super quiet, then you should be able to adjust that in your recording software when you bring the recording onto your computer. Now, obviously, there are physical limitations. If you really scream right down into the microphones, then there are physical limitations of what they will handle. But Zoom say anything up to about the volume of a jet engine should be absolutely fine. On the front face of this recorder, just below those microphones, we've got the screen and then a horizontal row of four buttons. These are quite rubbery rectangle buttons. And then below that, there is a group of five buttons arranged a bit like the number five on a dice or a print letter X. And we'll talk through what all those buttons do in a second. On the right-hand side, coming from the back towards me, there is a 3.5mm jack for plugging in a lavalier mic or a line-in source. In front of that, we've got a USB-C port that can be used for charging. You can use the device as a microphone or as a storage device. Then we've got the menu button, and at the very bottom there is the microSD card cover. So you get your nail in there and then you can put in your card. So it's not supplied with a card, or at least mine wasn't, so I had to get one. The card supports up to a terabyte. So if you've got a really big microSD card, now they're very small, those cards, don't force it in. Be very careful as you plug it in. I always think it's a bit like, I don't know, like a toaster or something like that. You've just got to be a little bit careful. But once the card's in there, the cover closes and it's not going away. On the left-hand side, right at the top there, we've got the headphone socket. 3.5mm jack, and then we've got an old school volume wheel, which you roll that away from you to increase the volume. Don't do what I did and have the volume all the way down when you switch it on and then think, they said it was going to talk and then it didn't. It was just my volume was down. So yeah, just make sure that is turned up. And then we've got one of these slidey switches, which in the up position, it'll click, and that means that all the other buttons are locked, so you don't accidentally start recording in your pocket. Or if you slide it towards you, then you get a sprung kind of position, and you just hold it there for a second and you will hear the startup sound.
Guide sound, English plus beep.
That's what happens when you get out of the box. So I've reset the settings just so that you can hear that. We are able to choose between English plus beep.
Beep only.
Beep only.
Off.
And off. Okay, I'm going to choose
English plus beep.
English plus beep. Now, how am I doing that? Remember that row of four buttons, the horizontal row? The two middle buttons act like arrow keys. So you can move forward with button three, or you can move back with button two. These buttons in this row are context sensitive. They behavior changes depending on where you are in the Zoom recorder. On the far right hand side of that row, so button four, that acts as an enter or an okay button. So I'm going to press that now.
Language, English.
Okay, and now we can choose our language. I will take English, but let's just show you what's here.
Francais, Deutsch, Italiano, Espanol, Chinese, Japanese, English.
Okay, I'm going to choose English.
Date format, year, month.
Now, this is where we choose our date format. I'm happy with year, month, day, sometimes called the Chinese format. But I understand that if I change this, the setting the time and date actually is not as accessible as it could be. So I would recommend leaving that to the default for now. So I'm going to press button four.
Set date, time, year.
Okay, so now we have the fields, so year, month, date, and so on. So I can use the arrow keys to move between each of those fields and then choose the value. So I'm going to press button four.
2024,
that's the one we want. So I'm going to press enter here.
2024, set.
And you can hear that's been set. I'm now going to press button three to move across to the next field.
Month.
Press OK.
One.
And set the month with button three.
Two, three.
Okay, so it's March.
Three, set.
And then I'll cross to the day.
Day. One.
And it is the 8th, so I'm going to move forward.
Two, three, four, five, seven, eight.
Okay.
Eight, set.
And now the time.
Hour, zero.
And it's 24 hours, so I'm actually going to go back because I want 17.
15, 6, 17.
I overshot slightly.
17, set. Minute.
Here's my minutes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 10. Set. Okay. Battery type, alkaline.
Okay, and the batteries I checked are alkaline. So remember, two AAAs. You can use rechargeables.
Done.
And we should be done.
Rec standby. Remaining time, 99. Hour, 59. Minute. Battery level, full. Stereo. Low cut. Off.
So quite a lot of information there. We heard that we're in the recording standby mode. So if you plug in headphones, I wanted you to be able to hear the internal speaker. It is a little bit nasal, but it is a tiny little speaker for monitoring. But if you plug in headphones, you'll be able to hear yourself when in standby or while recording. The stereo, it's set to record in stereo. You can change that to mono. We'll do that in a second. The low cut filter is off. Oh, and we also heard about the remaining space on the card. Now, I'm not entirely convinced that that is 100% accurate, because we're told we've got 99 hours and 59 minutes remaining on the card. But I did record quite a lot of things, and I still had 99 hours and 59 minutes left on the card. So I think that's probably the maximum value that can be shown. It shouldn't cause you too many problems, but something to be aware of. All right, the first button in this row four then toggles the mono stereo, but you've got to press it twice quickly to change the value. If you just press it once, it'll just tell you the current state. So I'm going to press that twice quickly.
Stereo, mono.
Okay, so we're now in mono, and the second button will cycle through various low cut settings. I've left that off, but you can filter out some of, like, if you've got low hum or vibration or traffic or something like that that's causing your problem. The third button is for placing a marker in your file. We'll do that in a second. And then the fourth button is for deleting your file. So if we want to start recording, we simply press the center button. Remember that group of five buttons that I mentioned that's arranged like a print X? So press the center button of that. It's the record button. It's flush with the surface of the Zoom H1 Essential. It has a little indentation in the center. So I'm going to press that now. This is our first recording on the Zoom H1 Essential. Well, of course, if we don't count the 20 or so that we did last week in Belfast. I'm going to press the button now to put in our first marker. That is our first marker in the file. And of course, if we had headphones on, we would hear mark. But obviously, we don't want the word mark appearing in our file. Anyway, I'm going to press it again. We've now got our second marker set, and it feels like time to press stop. Okay, a little double beep there for stop. And now if I press the top right-hand button of that group of five, then we will hear the recording.
Playback.
This is our first recording on the Zoom H1 Essential. Well, of course, we don't count the 20 or so that we...
Okay, now I'm going to press the forward button, which is below play.
That is our first marker. We've now got our second marker.
Okay, so as you can hear, the forward and back buttons, which would normally skip between tracks, those are the two bottom buttons of that group of five. When you have markers set, they'll very conveniently jump you between those markers. So if you wanted to mark a particular part of a presentation, a lesson, lecture, or something like that, then the marker feature is working well. Okay, and then if we want to delete this file, then we simply press the far right button on the group of four.
Move to trash. Cancel.
Okay, and because we want to make sure that we definitely are going to do this, we're on cancel, so we have to arrow to execute, which we can do by pressing one of those middle buttons on that line.
Move to trash.
Okay, move to trash. Going to press OK.
Done.
Okay, and there it is. It's gone to the trash folder. You can actually get it back, because if you plug this into your computer as a storage device, you can find a trash folder. Okay, so just be aware of that. So the file list. So if I try now to move between files.
File list.
We don't get any speech output. We just get some beeps as we move between files on the recorder. So the file names in the file list are not announced. Zoom are aware of that. But just be advised that that is the case at time of recording. So I want to just show you a couple of things in the menu real quick before we wrap up here. The menu button, if you remember, is on the right-hand side. I'm going to press that now.
Rec standby. Menu. Rec settings.
Okay, so the first option would take us into recording settings where we can change the sample rate. The default is 48 kilohertz. You may remember this device is a 32-bit float device, so all your recordings by default are in 32-bit, which should be all right. I'm going to move forward.
Repeat setting.
We've got repeat settings.
USB.
So this is if we want to copy content off to our mobile device or computer, we need to go into USB and we can choose some options in there. Let's do that now.
USB mic.
So USB mic is the first option. So if you wanted to use this as an audio device, so, you know, record directly into your computer or maybe even with conferencing software, you could do that. And then when you go into mic, you will then have to choose whether you're connecting to a mobile device or whether you're connecting to a computer.
USB file transfer.
The second option there is USB file transfer. So that forces the Zoom to behave like a storage device. And again, you have to choose mobile or Mac PC in that setting. And the important thing to bear in mind there is that if you choose the wrong option, it's not, you know, irrevocable. You can always back out of it and come back in and change it again. So don't worry too much about that. It will work with your iPhone though. So I've connected this with a USB-C cable to my iPhone 15, and I went into the Files app, and the Zoom came up as an untitled device because I hadn't given it a name. And I went into untitled, and I was able to access the files from my Zoom recorder.
USB mic.
Okay.
USB file transfer.
Okay, those are the two options there. I'm going to back out.
USB.
Okay, and what else have we got?
SD card.
SD card, so that'll let you test the card and format it.
Overdub.
And we've got an overdub option, so you can actually record another sound overlaid on top of an existing sound. So I don't know, maybe you had some music and then maybe you want to read a story over the top of that music or something. I don't know. It's up to you, really.
Output.
And then we've got output, so that controls whether that volume dial does anything or not, or whether you just have fixed volume output.
System.
And then in system, we can choose our accessibility settings, change the voice volume, and find out what version of the software we're running. And then the last item here
help.
Is help. And if you go into help,
help.
That's all you hear. It doesn't say anything because on the screen there is a code that you can scan that apparently takes you to the manual. So it'd be nice if it said that, but it doesn't. So there we are. That is the Zoom H1 Essential Series recorder. Really handy. I picked it up for £95 in the UK, and maybe you've got one already. Maybe you've got one of the more expensive ones. Let us know how you're getting on with it. What do you like? What don't you like? And next week we will be speaking with Zoom themselves and learning more about the Essential Series. That's it from us this time. If you like what you heard, then do tell a friend, or, you know, you could even rate us in one of those podcasting apps as well. How about that? We love to hear from you, of course, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Bavarkovich and the rest of the Tech Talk team, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.